It is Friday, January 24th, 2020. This is Ozarks at Large on your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF. We continue to begin our show an hour earlier than usual to make room for the NPR live coverage of the impeachment trial in the United States Senate. We expect these early starts will continue into early next week. You can keep up to date with our programming by following us on Facebook or checking in at KUAF.com. Ahead this hour, a human library where people are the books. The Fayetteville Public Library will host their second human library tomorrow afternoon. You'll be able to check out Time to have conversations with the human books. We'll learn more and meet one of the human books ahead on our show. Speaking of libraries, the Bentonville Public Library will welcome in the Year of the Rat tomorrow with a Chinese New Year's celebration from 1 to 3. You'll be able to make a paper lantern, play mahjong, and more. It's open to children of all ages, and it's free. And this weekend on Latino USA on 91.3, the banning of the sport of cockfighting in Puerto Rico and the cultural and economic repercussions. That's on Latino USA, Sunday afternoon at 3, on 91.3 KUAF. This is Ozarks at Large. With me is reporter and producer for Ozarks at Large, Zuzanna Sitek. Happy Friday, Zuzanna.
Happy Friday.
Last night, you went to a meeting of the Washington County Planning Board that included a discussion about a possible expansion of the Hunt Rogers Quarry. What can you tell us as far as background?
So the Hunt Rogers Quarry is located along North Parsons Road. It's out in the county. That puts it a little bit east of Springdale and just north of Highway 412. It sits on about 550 acres, and it's been in operation since 2004. Right now, that mining operation takes up about 240 acres, so about half the property. And Hunt Rogers is asking the planning board to approve a nearly 150-acre expansion. The company's vice president, Tim Gorman, went before the planning board last night. Here he is explaining why they feel the expansion is necessary.
The demand for our product is determined from our customers. You know, when there's schools built, homes are built, that's what is the demand that requires the need of stone to be used on projects.
So that was Vice President Tim Gorman. He says the existing mining operation has about 5 to 7 years left of quarrying material, and the expansion would extend that to 40 to 50 years.
Okay, there's a lot of opposition to this expansion. What did you hear at the meeting last night?
That's right. That opposition was definitely out in full force last night. It's made up almost entirely of people who own homes and property near the quarry. All the seats in the room were taken. People were standing against the walls in the doorways, and several of them spoke. The concerns really ran the gamut. Here's just a little bit of what we heard last night.
Quarry blasting, crushing operations, and the like release particle matter and hazardous silica dust into the air. Additionally, our air quality is affected by the diesel exhaust of industrial equipment and trucks that are heavily utilized in quarry operations.
I would like to say when the quarry first moved in, I wasn't necessarily too concerned about it until the blasting started. And since then, we have cracks in our walls. We have windows that are cracked. We have windows that are fogging.
I get we've got to be good divers. I get there's got to be industry. I get that we've got to have, you know, rock out in the industry. I'm in the construction industry. I get it, but we also have to be responsible, and we have to do business with integrity, and we have to keep our word when we say we're going to do something.
So those were the neighbors who live around the quarry and some of the concerns they have. The Beaver Water District also has raised concerns. The quarry sits just north of Friendship Creek, which flows into Beaver Lake, and the expansion area would be located in the Water District's source water protection zone. So there's the potential that the quarry operation could impact water quality at Beaver Lake.
All right, so earlier we heard from the vice president of the quarry, Tim Gorman. Did he have a response to this concern?
He did. He had a couple responses to some of the concerns. He said, you know, that the company has tried to be a good neighbor to the people who live around it. He also said they've complied with state and federal environmental regulations. He also brought up that the quarry has about 30 employees. He says they work directly in the area, so the company has to be mindful of their health. And Gorman says they're also working to find new ways to keep down the dust and noise that comes from the quarry.
All right. So people had their say. At the end of the meeting, what decision did the Washington County Planning Board come to?
The Planning Board voted unanimously to table the permit request until their meeting in April. Several board members expressed concerns about the plans for the expansion. Robert Daughtry said he would be more comfortable with an expansion that would be done in phases. So he asked Hunt Rogers to come back to the board with a plan that has phases for development and a timeline for expansion. Neil Helm also said he was uncomfortable with the size of the expansion and approving something that could potentially operate for another 50 years down the road. Here's a little bit of what he had to say.
On a high impact project, we need something that we can keep a short leash on. I mean, that's really what I'd like to see. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we can do that, but that's what I'd like to see.
So that was Planning Board Member Neil Helm talking there. And there are criteria for approving or denying these kinds of permits. Some are objective, and then there's a few subjective reasons.
Such as.
So those include the compatibility of the project with the surrounding area, whether it would be detrimental or dangerous to public health, safety, morals, which is my favorite, comfort, and general welfare. There's also the question of whether it diminishes property values in the surrounding area, and a lot of the neighbors definitely feel that that will be the case. And lastly, another criteria is whether it impedes development and improvement of the surrounding area.
Tabled till April. Does a decision have to be made in April?
So the Planning Board doesn't have to make a decision in April. They could ask for more information. We saw this happen in Benton County with the quarry project there, and it actually took a year for the Planning Board to come back and approve that project.
Susanna Sitek covered last night's Washington County Planning Board meeting about a possible expansion of a quarry. She'll continue following that. Thank you, Susanna.
Thank you.
Walton Arts Center's 10x10 art series presents Apollo's Fire, Baroque Orchestra, Vivaldi's Four Seasons, Rediscovered, Saturday, February 29th at 8 p.m. This ensemble brings Vivaldi's beloved concertos to life as revolutionary acts of musical storytelling. WaltonArtsCenter.org or 443-5600. Mount Sequoia Center in Fayetteville presents Spirits Dinner with mixologist Charlie Rausch, January 31st. The event includes a five-course dinner paired with craft cocktails utilizing elite spirits. Tickets at 443-4531 or mountsequoia.org. Sona, the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas, continues the 65th season February 1st at Walton Arts Center. Sona musicians and special guest soloists perform the season's second Masterworks concert featuring Carl Orff's masterpiece, Carmina Burana. Tickets at 443-5600 or sonamusic.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. Tomorrow afternoon, from 1 to 5 at the Fayetteville Public Library, the second human library will allow you to check out human books. That is, people that you can have a 15-minute conversation with about a subject they've decided to list as their book title, from advocating Rolodex to sometimes it's okay to be a pretty couch potato. Yesterday, we asked one of the human books, Megan Wishon, and Corey Williams, an adult services librarian at FPL, to give us a preview. Megan titled her book, The Good Fight, and says it deals with her battles with cancer.
Because it's cancer, the big C, everybody's scared of that. I am terrified of it. However, I'm an extremely naturally optimistic person. And even though I am optimistic, it rattled me to my core because it was a very devastating diagnosis. However, I smiled and was like, well, what do we got to do? So I just didn't let the big C scare me.
So what do you expect when you are, in the terminology, checked out? What do you think is going to happen?
I expect a lot of people are going to be curious as to why I'm so optimistic and happy. And I want that because I want them to ask so I can tell them my little secret, that it wasn't just me. I had a little army. Hopefully folks are wanting to be a little more aware and have some open-mindedness about it. So, and maybe I can help people with their own fear. Not necessarily about cancer, just life in general, maybe.
Corey Williams, I want to bring you in. You're an adult services librarian, reference librarian. What's your role in the human library on Saturday?
So we're really here to kind of facilitate. We've been planning this for several months, and kind of my role is to make sure that the books feel comfortable, to kind of get the volunteers all together. We have a lot of volunteers that are going to be there, and then also to sign people up to talk to different books, schedule their times, talk to them about the books, that sort of thing. Kind of be a librarian for the human books, I guess. Yeah.
I'm making an assumption that if someone has volunteered, and there are more than 20, right, human books?
Yes, there are 22 books.
I'm imagining if someone has signed up to be a human book, they're comfortable to some degree already.
Yes. Yeah, and we've had a few trainings on kind of what to expect. The books have kind of interviewed each other and talked to each other just to kind of get that practice in. But, yeah, a lot of them, they all applied. So they reached out to us to be a part of it. So they're very open about talking about their lives and about things that have happened to them. You know, we have books ranging from, you know, new immigrants to recovered alcoholism and all sorts of things and different topics for people to talk about, but they're all very open to doing so.
Megan, do you think someone who checks you out, and the title of the book is The Good Fight, and they're going to talk to you, as you put it, about the Big C, it's easier for someone, perhaps, to talk to you this way than, say, if they met you at the grocery store or through a mutual friend, and there's that fear that maybe she doesn't want to talk to me about this.
Right. The library, what's so great about it is it's more of a home atmosphere, comfortable atmosphere, friendly atmosphere, which is good because some of the topics can be kind of intimidating, but I think in a positive way. One of the books is an entrepreneur, and he really grabbed my heart. Omar, he's fantastic. I recommend checking his book out. So I've already become a fan of some of the other authors, and I really just encourage people to come out and look at the diversity, and this project is just, I love it so much because it opened your eyes to so many different things, like, wow, what would it be like to be, you know, the first generation immigrant? What would it be like to be an entrepreneur? What would it be like to be a blind woman? What would it be like to be a woman of color, or a firefighter, what a hero. So a lot of these books have captured my attention, so I know for a fact when I am off the shelf and I've been checked out, I will give the audience my attention, but I can't wait to be done so I can check out some of the other books because, like I said, they've really captured my heart and kind of just produced an energy inside me that's kind of, that I really like. I love this project, so I'm very honored to be a part of it.
Corey, what's it going to look like when someone shows up Saturday between 1 and 5 at the library?
So you'll walk into the library, and all of the books will be around what we call the ellipse, the big glass wall that you see right when you walk in. They'll be at tables. They'll have their names there. They'll all be wearing matching shirts because they're books. We've cataloged them. But you'll walk up to a table. There'll be a binder filled with all of their information, and you can choose what time you want to come talk to them, and you'll get a little library card that has your time and the name of the book that you're checking out.
And the books are in chapters, too. So if someone grabs my book, you know, they're like, oh, I want to know about the stem cell. Mm. I want to know about your hospital life. You know, so they can actually pick a chapter, which is really great. I love that part about the project. So you can hone on that specific topic, you know, like what's it like to be an author of a book? One of our books is an author. So you can grab some chapters out of her book. And that way the conversation, that 15 minutes, you can really hone in on the questions you want to ask and the information you want to receive.
I would hope this would spill out after 5 o'clock Saturday afternoon, that everyone who's involved takes this desire to have conversations, real conversations with people, with them outside of the building.
Yeah, I think that's really the hope is to spur this interest in having face-to-face conversations with people, to ask people about themselves, to kind of have that connection that I think really our society is kind of losing, that face-to-face connection. And then because, you know, there's all of this stuff on the internet where people are saying terrible things. But it's hard to say those things to a person that's right in front of you. But also it's easy to look at someone who's going through these things right in front of your face and feel something so different.
Megan, how'd you come up with the title? How long did it take you to do that?
Pretty quick. Just to play on words because I'm got a good attitude, kind of goofy. I can make jokes just about anything. So, yeah, the good fight for sure. Because, I'm still fighting today. I'll fight for the rest of my life. But the Human Library, creating this opportunity to have authentic conversations with people at a level of intimacy, I think is incredibly important.
That's a great word to use there, because there is an intimacy with this sort of conversation.
No matter the topic. No matter the topic of the book, whether, because cancer is so heightened, but forget cancer for a minute. But you take the author, you take the entrepreneur, I have so many questions already. I'm just already such a big fan. So I do look forward to the intimacy of having that conversation with and picking their brain. What were you thinking when you did that?
Megan Wishon will be a human book, one of 22, tomorrow from 1 to 5 at the Second Human Library at the Fayetteville Public Library. We also heard from Corey Williams, an adult services librarian at Fayetteville Public Library.
For the Central Arkansas Library System and KUAR, I'm Mark Chris with an Encyclopedia of Arkansas Minute. Anyone who has driven up Highway 65 in Central Arkansas has doubtless noticed the work of African-American stonemason Silas Owens. Born in Solomon Grove in 1907, Owens began working in construction as a teenager and helped build the elephant and reptile houses at the Little Rock Zoo during the Great Depression. But it was in his solo work building houses, churches, and other buildings that he developed the mixed masonry style, in which he faced houses with fieldstone slabs while using alternate patterns of bricks around windows, doors, arches, and posts, developing the meticulous rock work that would distinguish his buildings. While most of his work was in his native Faulkner County, Owens' architecture can also be found in Pulaski, Garland, Claiborne, Jefferson, Van Buren, Conway, and Hot Spring counties. He produced mixed masonry buildings through the mid-1950s and died on April 4, 1960. 29 of his creations have been recognized in the National Register of Historic Places. To learn more, visit encyclopediaofarkansas.net.
This is Ozarks at Large. A funny, funny man died this week. Terry Jones was a member of Monty Python, the British troupe that made irreverence a higher art form through their TV shows, movies, books, and records. Jones was an integral part of the Python classic films like The Life of Brian and The Meaning of Life. But in 2006, he came to the University of Arkansas not to make us laugh necessarily, but to discuss history. At the time, Jones was the force behind a then-new book and BBC television series about the Roman Empire and the people conquered by the Romans. Both the book and the TV series were titled Barbarians. When we talked with Terry Jones, he told us that history had been quite kind to the Romans, but not exactly fair to their enemies.
You've got to take everything with a piece of salt. I mean, also with the Roman historians, you've got to bear in mind Julius Caesar in the Gallic Wars describes an elk. And when he describes the elk, he says, "Elks have no knees. And if they can't get down or get up again from the ground. And if they go to sleep leaning against trees." And so the way that people catch them in northern Germany is that they come along, they saw halfway through the trees, and when the elk leans against it, the tree breaks, and the hunters come and pick them up in the morning. So that was Julius Caesar on elk. So you have to be sort of take everything with a pinch of salt.
And then, of course, complicating the matters is you have the Roman version of things surviving, or more survival than anybody else, and then being repeated and repeated.
I think so, yeah. I mean, it's partly to do with the Renaissance and the sort of the Europe's love affair with the Renaissance and America's love affair with the Renaissance, the belief in that the Renaissance was this enlightenment that somehow new knowledge and new attitudes and man discovered his individuality, and it's all nonsense. Throughout the Middle Ages, men were individuals, and they were. You only have to read Chaucer's Canterbury Tales to realise that there was. Everybody had a sense of individuality. It's just nonsense to think that people didn't.
As you mentioned in the book, no one ever called themselves barbarians. That was kind of the Roman word for folks on the other side.
Exactly. I think every culture has its word for the others. Although, oddly enough, barbarian was originally a Greek word. It was actually coined for the Greeks. The Greeks said anybody who didn't speak Greek babbled. They went ba 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 ba. So they called them barbarians. They called the Romans barbarians. And then the Romans adopted the Greek word and called the Greeks barbarians. And anybody else who wasn't Roman, they called barbarians. So it's the series about the BBC series is about the people who lived on the fringe of the Roman Empire, whom the Romans came into contact with. Really, I think one of the reasons why I wanted to do these series was that there were parallels with the world today. I mean, I think there always are with history. And in the Roman world, you had Rome, in the classical world, you had Rome as the single unchallenged superpower in the world. And it carries out a foreign policy of preemptive strikes. And the curious thing is that here's this powerful country, richest, most powerful country, and yet it's driven by fear. And in the case of Rome, the Romans 9/11 happened in 390 BC when the Celts overran Rome and took Rome over for 6 months, half a year. The Celts ran amok in Rome, or took over Rome, and eventually were bought off for 1,000 pieces of gold. And this event was a stain in the Roman psyche. It haunted the Roman psyche, really, and prompted their foreign policy for the next 1,000 years, trying to neutralize all the states around Rome in order to make the borders safe, make sure that dreadful thing never happened again.
I was unaware of the, I guess, country or territory that was called Dacia.
Yeah, Dacia or Dacia. Dacia could have been Dacia. I don't know. The Dacians. Dacia, yeah, the Dacians. Well, not many people have heard of the Dacians. I certainly hadn't heard of the Dacians before we started doing these programs. And that's because the Romans wiped them out. And it's worth bearing in mind when you think about Rome as the bearer of civilization, which is what it always put itself out to be, that Trajan's Column in Rome, when you go and visit Trajan's Column, it's worth bearing in mind that this is probably one of the only public monuments in the world that is that commemorates an act of genocide. And all the pictures that go around Trajan's Column right up to the top, they depict the Romans methodically destroying the Dacians and killing them all and wiping them out and driving them out of Dacia. And it ends with the Dacian king, the Dacian leader, committing suicide. And you see the picture of him cutting his own throat, which is the kind of thing the Romans liked on their monuments.
When we think of Romans, we think of Peter Ustinov in a toga. And then when you think of barbarians or Huns or Visigoths or Vandals, they are uncouth and illiterate, and the Romans are the ones who invented everything.
For instance, the Celtic civilization was in many ways much preferable to Rome. I mean, in Rome, don't forget, you could put if you had an unwanted child, an unwanted baby, you put it on the town rubbish dump. And that was fine. That was a perfectly acceptable thing to do. And in fact, people would go around the rubbish dumps in the morning to see if any unwanted babies had been left on the rubbish dump. And if they saw a healthy-looking specimen, they'd pick them out and bring them up to be slaves. And that was considered socially totally acceptable, as indeed was death in the arena. Death as a public spectacle was also seen to be actually not just acceptable, but it was actually defined Romanitas. It defined being Roman. To actually go and witness people being killed in the arena meant you were a Roman, and especially if you were a young man, it was a responsibility to actually go and have to do that. If you were a woman, you had no real identity in Rome. You had no legal existence, in fact. You belonged to your father, and then you belonged to your husband. You couldn't own property, you had no possessions, you couldn't hold public office. You were basically, so you didn't exist. The Celtic world was very different. There was a burial was found dating from about 400 BC, nearly 500 BC. And it was of a very powerful leader, and you could tell by the weapons and the chariots and things in the burial. This is in Vix in France. This was found, and the curious thing was this powerful leader was a woman. It was be unthinkable in the Roman world, but this was a powerful leader who obviously ran her community. And you look at some of the most powerful and best-known leaders in the Celtic world, Boadicea, now known as Boudica, powerful woman leader. And for the Romans to fight Boudica was really embarrassing because they were fighting a woman. You know, they didn't know where to look, really.
Putting together a documentary or a book about barbarians and the Roman relationship, how did you ever form the narrative? I mean, you're talking hundreds and hundreds of years, and it reads like, you know, a narrative story.
You miss a lot of things out, Kyle. That's what you do. it is quite hard, actually. I mean, in the end, we decided to sort of do a sort of a go geographically and rather than doing a chronological thing, there's 4 one-hour programs in the series. And the first program is about the Celts. And then we go east to the Germans, the Goths, and the Dacians, which is now present-day Romania. I mean, that's why Romania is called Romania, because basically the Romans wiped out the Dacians and put Romans in, so it's Romania, in the place of the Romans. Then we go to Persia and Greece, and so that's Iran, basically, in the Middle East and Greece, and then we end up with the Vandals and the Huns. You can't really tell the story. But we make it. I mean, history is basically making stories up, basically, and trying to be as faithful as you can to the original.
Do you become somewhat cynical, though, because there are war after war after war, and it's as if, after a while, this war doesn't seem any different than this one, and it seems like that's what we're destined, we being human beings, destined to do?
Well, I don't think it makes you cynical. I think it just makes you aware of why wars are fought. And basically, wars are fought because some people, some very rich people, get even richer if you have a war. It's a way, war is a way of concentrating capital. It's a way of concentrating money by saying the nation is under threat, you can get everybody to say, oh, fine, we'll give up our rights, we'll give you money, just to defend us. And it's a very ancient instinct, and it's never changed. It's always the same. And but some people, nowadays it's big companies, make a lot of money out of these things. And all the millions of dollars that go into fighting a war, or in the case of Iraq, dropping bombs on Iraq, it's all going in, most of it is going into the pockets of a few big companies.
Finally, the book ends with this great meeting between two. You have the Holy Father, Pope Leo I, and you have Attila the Hun. I mean, it just boggles the imagination to see them meeting on the banks of a river.
It's curious to think that as a result of that meeting, Pope Leo, who really wasn't Pope then, I mean, Pope in that time just meant Father, Papa, but he becomes Pope. He becomes the first Pope as a result of that meeting, because he gets such kudos from the fact that he claims he's persuaded Attila to go home, and he says it's a miracle, and St. Peter and St. Paul were flying above his heads and the Huns were terrified, and Christianity turned back the tide of that seemed to be oversweeping Europe. Claim made him generally accepted as leader of the Western Catholic Church. So he became the Pope, and the Pope became the preeminent. Up to that point, there'd been no preeminent leader in Christianity. And from that moment on, the Pope was the leader of Western Christendom. And it's so ironic to think that that's actually Attila the Hun's only lasting creation, was the creation of the Pope.
Terry Jones, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Kyle. Nice to talk to you.
The late Terry Jones speaking with us during his visit to the University of Arkansas in 2006. Both the book and the BBC television series we discussed are titled Barbarians. The member of Monty Python died earlier this week.
Support comes from Butterfield Trail Village, Northwest Arkansas retirement community catering to active lifestyles and resident well-being, offering apartments to village homes, plus a daily calendar of activities and events. ButterfieldTrailVillage.org for more. Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families celebrates the 19th annual Soup Sunday, January 26th, 4 to 6:30 at the John Q. Hammond Convention Center in Rogers. This family-friendly fundraiser includes soups and breads, desserts, live music, and auction items. 927-9800 or aradvocates.org. Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art presents North Forest Lights, a nighttime light and sound experience in the museum's forest. These 5 artistic installations connect with nature through music, light, and magical moments. Tickets at crystalbridges.org.
It is Friday, January 24th, 2020. With me, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
I'm still getting used to that 2020 thing.
Well, it's still kind of new, Becca.
Yeah, it is still kind of new. And if you don't do anything else this weekend, I'll see you at Heartwood Gallery in South Fayetteville.
It's the farewell.
It is the farewell. It's the last hurrah. Heartwood actually closed December 31st, but they're going to open the building, and a bunch of the artists are going to come Friday, Saturday, and Sunday to say goodbye, let you buy their stuff, tell you where they're going to be available after this.
What are the hours?
It's 10 to 6, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So, or as Laura Hightower wrote in the story, if you're of the opinion that we could all use a little more kindness in the world, then Trike Theater's production of A Year with Frog and Toad is the show for you. You don't have to have kids to go to these Trike Theater shows. They're awesome. This is a musical adaptation of the children's classic. And the lesson is that Frog and Toad are very different, but they're best friends. And it all works out for them.
Is this at Nadine Baum?
This is at Nadine Baum. It's Trike Theater from Bentonville. But at Nadine Baum at 2 and 4 tomorrow. And again, February 1st and 8th. And 10 a.m. shows on February 1st and 8th also. And it's $14 for tickets. And then Mount Sequoia is doing dinner.
Yes. They have developed quite the culinary event calendar.
And they have their own chef, Justice Mall, and they've announced their 2020 season of culinary events, which starts January 31st with what they call a high spirits dinner.
Does that involve imbibing?
Yes.
Oh,
mixologist
good.
Charlie Roush is going to be going along with, I think it's a 5-course dinner. And then February 14th, there's a Valentine's Day dinner. March 14th, there's a brewmaster dinner with Ozark Beer Company. Mm-hmm. March 28th, there's a crawfish boil.
Oh,
that's April good. 17th is Dining in the Dark, and I've got to find out more about that.
I know a lot about that. I've talked to some people who have done it, and you go in blindfolded. Justice has done that at his previous job in Bentonville, and he's done it a couple times at Mount Sequoia. And everyone I've talked to who's ever experienced really likes it and says it makes you think about food completely differently.
May 16th is a pig and whiskey barbecue and bourbon night. And then it goes on for the rest of the year. Dinners are somewhere between $30 and $135, depending on the dinner. And you can find out more at mountsequoia.org. And we'll come back Sunday and have more stuff.
Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
At this point, I don't really see myself doing studio jazz albums. I'm much better when I can just be playing the gig, playing the concert. So it's kind of like catching lightning in a bottle.
That's Fred Hirsch, and I'm Robert Ginsburg, your host for Shades of Jazz. I'll feature Fred's interview this Friday on the program and a healthy dose of his music. Shades of Jazz, right here on KUAF.
This is Ozarks at Large. Jess Harp has been playing music at various venues throughout Northwest Arkansas for a year or two now. What started with just Jess and a guitar has been fleshed out into a full band. Tonight, he and his bandmates will perform at Record in downtown Bentonville, a show that will also feature performances by Pura Coco and Jamie Lou Connolly. Earlier this week, Jess Harp, Dick Darden, Hayden Johnson, and James Williams came to the Furman Garner Performance Studio to talk with Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis and give us a preview of his show. We'll be right back.
lasted longer than a moment. Longer than a moment.
Y'all together perform as Jess Harp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How did you come together as this configuration? When did you come together as this configuration?
Our former drummer and I, this is Hayden talking, yeah. Hi. Bum rushed Jess outside of a La La Land show a couple years back because everyone wanted to back Jess and he wanted to start playing. And we were like, man, it's not going to happen unless we just tell. So we just showed up and we're like, hey, we're your band.
Yep, it's true.
Band practice is on Thursday at my house. Don't be late. Bring beer. Then Dick and Buck both came in pretty soon. After that,
I started playing drums.
Buck was the drummer.
We tried to go by Jess and the Heartbreakers, but
yeah, that's actually something we'd like to clear the air on right here on the radio.
It just sounds too much like Heartbreakers when you say Heartbreakers.
It looks good on paper, mm-hmm. as they say, or these days on the screen, but
yeah.
But you have to stop yourself in the middle. Heartbreakers.
Mm-hmm. It's that glottal stop, and you need to hear that.
And then you know. Jesse Baby Forever kind of played around as our name, but
We were kind of already, I mean, everybody knows you as Jess Harp.
Yeah. So now it's just going to be a self-titled album, I guess, right? Unless we come up with an album name.
You know, whatever. Yeah. People still like to put Heartbreakers on stuff.
Yeah. Stop doing that, please. We're not, I mean, no offense to anyone who's done it.
No offense, PSA, don't do it.
So y'all have a pretty unique style. You came up with the term just before we were recording that I think is perfect for it.
Travis Keemer came up with that term.
Okay, fair enough.
At a Smoke and Barrel show, he was asking what kind of band we were, and we were like, well, we're kind of shoegazy, but all definitely like leaning kind of a honky-tonk direction. He was like, oh, so like bootgaze.
Bootgaze.
It's like a shoegaze band that will do the occasional country cover.
Yeah. Right?
So bootgaze.
We just really don't want to call ourselves alt-rock, so that's why we're beating around the bush.
Fair enough.
Alt-rock, yeah. I don't think it's not 1997. Like, you're not playing what's the dude from Mark Tremonti? You're not playing a Mark Tremonti guitar at that. Dallas Cowboys halftime show or something, you know.
Yeah, there's no sweet picking in Jess Harp.
How did y'all fall upon that style though? I mean, because it's not something that many people would default to.
Just kind of how Jess plays.
Yeah, I just play with a little bit of like reverb and overdrive, kind of get a little bit of the big wall of sound going. A lot of my favorite music is shoegaze, like Slow Dive, My Bloody Valentine, Swirlies. But then I've like fallen in love with country like only the past couple of years. Like I never listened to country my whole life until a couple years ago. And now I've like been listening through the
canon.
You
and everybody else.
Me and everybody else, exactly, yeah. So I don't know. It's just so fun. And it's also like I'm like a relatively new musician. Like I've been singing in choir, but playing guitar and singing and writing songs and stuff is new to me. So it's like what I want to play. My skill level, nothing against country, but just like playing the shoegaze like those bands do, like My Bloody Valentine stuff. It's like, I mean, I don't think I'll ever be able to play like that. So it's kind of like the country songs. I can cover a song I really like. I like the lyrics, like the melody, and I can play it and sing it. So it's like, I don't know.
Yeah. The other, I think, I don't know that much about shoegaze, but I know a lot of shoegaze artists are like, you can't really hear the vocals, and the vocals aren't really, I guess, as important as the guitar, mm-hmm, whereas mm-hmm. I feel like in this band, the vocals are definitely the point of it.
Right. The pleasing vocals have the point.
I took a drive and wound up by your side.
So y'all have been working on an album?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about it.
We wrapped it up in two long days.
On the album. Yeah, it's down to just, I guess,
mixing and mastering. We did a really long day this past Saturday. We were there from like 1 p.m. to almost 11. But Logan West and Chris Moore over at East Hall, they just blew us away, really. Like, we did it in two full days. And I figured it'd take longer and it wouldn't be as fun or easy, but it was a blast. I don't know. I was kind of dreading getting it all down. It seemed like a mountain of work and stuff, but I don't know. I'm excited.
We only did six songs too, so it wasn't
It'll be a pretty short release. Yeah. It won't be like a straight to vinyl release. We'll probably release a cassette.
Probably tape dad.
You didn't hear it. And the streaming services.
Yeah. You'll have a show coming up this weekend in Bentonville, right?
Yes.
Give us the details about that. What's going on?
So it's at a place called Record. It's in like an event center sort of place. So they do all sorts of stuff. Like, they've hosted a little craft show and they've done some concerts and stuff before. They've done weddings. It's kind of all over the place. Sort of a blank slate. Three of us also work there. We also do work there sometimes. And our good friend, Morgan Johnson, shout out to Morgan, helps kind of run the place. She does everything there, I guess. Yeah. Anyway, it's in Bentonville. It's right off the square. And it's a show where we've got us, Jess Harp, full band. And then we've got Jamie Lou Connolly of Jamie Lou and the Hullabaloo. Her and her husband are as a duo. And then Pura Coco, who is kind of like a brand new to the scene artist from Rogers. She just put out like a six-song EP, which is really awesome. It's on Spotify, Pura Coco. So the three acts there. And then we've got a friend of ours, Maddie Logan from Austin, who is a former Fayetteville resident. She's coming to do a vintage pop-up. So there's going to be Vintage Clothes and...
Mad Dog Vintage.
Mad Dog Vintage, I got to get the name in there. And then, you know, there's going to be drinks, playing music.
Maybe, friends.
You know, friends, merriment, you know. It's a show, and it's in Bentonville, so for you Fayetteville folks, you know, if you want to get out of the bubble.
How much does it cost?
$5 whole. Three bands.
I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it.
Well, Hayden, I got you on the list. So.
Am I?
Yeah, everybody in this room. Tim, you want to be on the list, you can be on the list.
When does it start?
It starts at 8 o'clock. Doors are at 7. Music starts at 8. Be there near the square or B square. Woo! Holding that one in the back pocket all day. I was just dying to say that one. Yes, doors at 7. Show starts at 8. Three bands, so it'll probably go a couple hours, maybe two and a half or so, something like that.
Son of
That was Jess Harp, James Williams, Hayden Johnson, and Dick Darden speaking with and performing for Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis earlier this week inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. They perform tonight at Record in downtown Bentonville. Cover is $5, doors at 7, music at 8. Also on the bill tonight, Jamie Lou Connolly and Pura Coco. You can find out more about Jess Harp's music by searching Facebook.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Support for KUAF comes from the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal, now featuring entrepreneurs and SBA leaders, plus local business news from Northwest Arkansas. Subscriptions and information at 725-0394 or nwabusinessjournal.com. Support comes from Mockingbird Kitchen, locally owned and operated Tuesday through Sunday, serving modern Ozark seasonal dishes using local ingredients. Open for lunch, dinner, weekend brunch, and catering. Mockingbirdkitchen.com for menus and more.
An update from our show yesterday. The Harrison City Council last night debated a proposed ordinance to enforce the use of medical marijuana within city limits. Medical marijuana, legalized in Arkansas in 2016, is regulated by the Arkansas Department of Health. Mayor Jerry Jackson says Harrison will be the first municipality to enforce rules barring consumption of the drug in certain places.
Yeah, we presented the ordinance. And the ordinance was passed unanimously on its first reading. It has to have two more readings, and that will take place either next month or the next 2 months.
Mayor Jackson says that allows time for public comment. State statute prohibits consuming the drug in public, on the grounds of a school, in motor vehicles, and healthcare facilities. Harrison's draft would allow law enforcement to punish offenders.
When they violate the ordinance, and the ordinance specifically says where they cannot use marijuana, and when that is violated, one of two ways. We'll either issue them a citation at that point, or we'll actually arrest them and book them. And that's up to the officer's discretion.
Any violation, according to the draft ordinance, will be punishable by a fine of no less than $100 and no more than $1,500. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and St. Paul. 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Contributors today included Zuzanna Sitek, Jacqueline Froelich, who provided the update on Harrison and medical marijuana, and Timothy Dennis. Timothy also mastered our show. Daniel Carruth assisted with our archive interview with Terry Jones, and archival presentations on our show are made possible with support from the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle. We will be back with you Sunday morning at 9 with Weekend Ozarks at Large. You can always find full editions of our show as well as individual stories and interviews at ozarksatlarge.com. We're available as a free podcast where almost all podcasts are available. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for being with us. Live coverage of the Senate trial continues next. Have a great Friday.